I don't have to be in that clunky world. There's a clunkiness to it. I had everything set up on Windows. I had my whole life on that machine. You know, my illustrations, my writing, my banking. You know, it's like being stuck in a bad relationship. It works on some level, and so, you know, you don't want to make that jump and take the effort to do it. But then once you do it, you realize you should have done it a long time ago. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, and I'm a freelance writer and illustrator.
Hello, and welcome to Lilcast's Best 30 Plus Minute App Competition. You're going to hear all week long. I'm Airfon, the Max Elijah. Why did I say that? I don't know. I'm your host.
Should we F on the Elijah Max?
I kind of like my way better. Your way sounds strange. Joining me today, he's the only guy who's ever brought a six-pack to an Apple keynote. Ladies and gentlemen, the founder of Cult-O-Mac, Leander Caney, is here.
Well, I thought you were talking about my abs for a minute, but you meant the other kind of six-pack.
Also with us, he's the coolest guy I know, and I think he might be one of my best friends, and I hope he feels the same way. Cult-O-Mac managing editor Lewis Wallace is here.
Aw, that's the nicest thing anybody said to me in weeks, if not months.
You're really just one of my favorite people, and I hope that you remember that this Christmas. Holy moly, we're way off track already. Well, here's what we got for you guys this week. Is the iPhone XS the worst Apple S phone of all time? Now, that sounds like a clickbait title. And yeah, I admit, it kind of is. But I have empirical evidence that it just might be the worst S phone ever. We'll discuss. I'm sure you guys will tell me how wrong I am. And everyone will be mad at me for even bringing this up. But I think it's worth discussing. Also, we'll run through the reviews, what the early reviews are saying about the iPhone XS and the Apple Watch Series 4. And if we have time, because we might spend the whole episode just arguing about these first two topics. If we have time, we'll tell you about the one Apple Watch feature that's giving people a serious case of FOMO. And we'll also tell you what FOMO means, because I had to look it up. Plus, a leaked detail in iOS 12.1 all but confirms a new iPad event will be happening this fall. We'll tell you more about that. Again, if we have time, this episode is so stacked. It's so crammed full of good stuff. I really don't know if we're going to make it to the end. What was I thinking? Lewis, I saw your note about how long these notes were, and I was like, they aren't that long. And then I started scrolling through them, and I was like, these are long. These are very long. There's no way we're going to make it through all this stuff. Okay, before we dive in to our discussion about the iPhone XS, let me say thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Now with three mattress models, the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential, Casper mattresses are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural geometry. Not to mention, the breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature throughout the night. And it's delivered to your door in a small, how do they do that size box with free shipping and returns in the US and Canada. But the best part is you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free Sleep On It trial. Casper wants you to be comfortable. They don't want you to be stuck on a mattress that you don't like, so you get to sleep on it, jump on it, see how you like it, live with it. And if you don't like it, you can send it back to Casper and they'll even pay to take it back. Here's what you should do. Head on over to casper.com/cultcast. See what they have to offer. When you're ready to make your purchase, use code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll get $50 towards select mattresses. That's code CULTCAST at checkout at casper.com/cultcast. Terms and conditions do apply. Leander Caney, is the iPhone XS the worst Apple S phone of all time?
Yeah, they say that every year, every time. This is the most boring iPhone ever.
I'm not saying it's the most boring iPhone ever. I'm just saying, well, is it the worst S phone ever?
No, definitely not. Why don't you read out your little list and okay, we'll see.
So I want to caveat this discussion with, I don't think the XS is a bad phone. In fact, I want one very badly. But as far as the S phone goes, the history of the S phones, they've always had some big banner feature every year because they're not doing a complete redesign. They have to give you some cool feature that they've been working on for years. And here's the phone where they're finally going to introduce it. They want to keep you hooked, right? The 10S doesn't have one of those, as far as I can tell. So the 3GS, dramatically faster data. The 4S, that's when Apple gave us Siri. 5S, we received Touch ID. 6S, we got 3D Touch. 10S, we got...
Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff.
Even Apple, though, didn't really know what to say about it at the keynote. They talking about all these smaller features, but every iPhone has smaller features.
Well, right. See, they're just moving away from calling out one marquee feature to a whole bunch of smaller improvements.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you think this was an intentional strategy?
I don't know.
Well, You're holding it wrong. That's Leander's answer. You're holding it wrong.
I think, you know, yeah, you know, they're touting like it's an improvement across the board, you know, a whole bunch of things, which I think is fair enough. And as you said, you're jonesing to get one, too. I think that's a fair marketing message, you know, like, as opposed to, like, here's one giant, marquee feature that we're gonna say is the new thing.
So the big feature for the XS is all these little tiny features that we're building in, is what you're saying. It's like, look at the big feature. Look at all these tiny ones.
Right, the camera, the speed, the screen.
The neural engine.
Yeah, the new chip. A whole bunch of stuff. You don't get just one feature, you get a dozen features.
Because with the Max, it's obvious, it's the big, beautiful screen, which I really do want. But if you're going from a 10 to a 10S, leave the Max out of it, that movement is much more of a lateral movement. You know, it's like there's not really a whole lot of stuff in the XS that you don't already have in the 10, in my opinion.
I think that's definitely true.
It's a much more marginal increase. In fact, I was saying this on Twitter. So again, I don't think this is a bad phone. I do want one. But if you're coming from the 10, as far as moving to a new phone every year, this S phone is probably one of the least compelling S phones that I've seen. In years past, it's been there has been a marquee feature that has drawn me away from my iPhone to the S phone. And this year, there's just a lot of smaller stuff. And, you know, the 10 is a really special phone. I've grown to love it. I still don't love the very narrow aspect ratio, even though the XS Max shares that same narrow aspect ratio. It's just a bigger phone. But the 10, other than that, is probably my favorite iPhone that I've ever used. It has a special place in my heart. I love that it's the 10th anniversary edition of the iPhone. I love Face ID. I go on and on about the phone. So there's also that nostalgic value that is keeping me with the 10. And actually, I canceled my pre-order for the XS Max.
Wow.
And I'm going to go into the Apple Store when it launches, and I'm going to look at the Max first and then probably immediately regret my decision. And
so why did you do that?
Well, I was looking at all the small improvements that they made, and I just couldn't justify the cost. In my own life, I've already purchased a $3,400 MacBook Pro.
You've got kids coming left and right, right?
I've got 14 kids now. I've got several wives, several girlfriends. Yeah, I have an expensive lifestyle. And also, I want to buy the new iPad when it comes out. That's going to be another $800. I did purchase the Apple Watch Series 4. I kept that order in place. That's another $430. So I'm thinking, I'm adding up all this money, and I'm like, I'm spending like, I don't know, over $5,000 in new products or $5,000 in new products. Do I really also need a phone that's only so slightly marginally better than the one I already have? I am not convinced that I do. Until I go into the Apple Store and see one, and I immediately plunk down my credit card and buy the Max, you know. I'm going to go see it first, and we'll see how it looks. But so I'm not saying it's a terrible phone. I just think it's the least compelling S phone to upgrade to if you already have the previous model. Lewis, anything to add to that?
Well, I'm doing exactly what you're saying isn't that exciting, which is going from the 10 to the 10S. And, I'm actually excited about the camera. You know, these new features in this camera sound awesome. And I'm always a huge fan of stuff working faster, you know? So I don't know. I understand what you're saying, like, but then one of the things that you held up is like, oh, gee, a marquee feature, 3D touch. Ooh. I mean, does anybody even really use it? I mean, I think it's a great thing, but...
I accidentally used it the other day.
It is great, but
I was
like,
totally confused. I thought I broke my phone.
It's like the great misunderstood and forgotten marquee feature.
I've been forcing myself to use it because it actually is super helpful if you do know how to use it.
Yeah, it's great where it exists.
You're going to get us in trouble, Lewis. We have a small but very passionate group of people who listen to this show who do love 3D touch and would revolt if it were ever removed.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying. I think the camera is as good as that as far as like getting people excited. I mean, I'm very excited about it. And it to me, the fact that they've, you know, they talked up the speed of this new chip and neural engine, I just think it's probably going to be a better experience. I mean, for that matter, just upgrading to iOS 12 really made my 10 run faster. That was a thrill. So
it made a big improvement, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's like it was custom designed for the iPhone 10. It made everything on the iPhone 10 more fluid, easier to use. I love iOS 12 on iPhone 10 right now.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that feels weird to me is like I'm going to walk in there tomorrow, and I'm going to hand over a phone that's perfectly good, and I'm getting a phone that's slightly better.
That's right.
But, you know, that's the beauty of the iPhone upgrade program. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
And see, I'm not on the iPhone upgrade program right now. I wish I were, because I would probably do exactly what you're doing without giving it much thought, because it's a no-brainer. I'm making the payment anyway every month, so, you know, why not just go ahead and do that? Also, if you're moving from a phone that is older, if you have an iPhone 7, if you have an iPhone 8, then you're getting a phone that I absolutely adore, the iPhone 10, but a version that's even better than the one I already have.
Well, right. There you go. That's the whole point of the S upgrade, isn't it?
Yes. And a lot of people on Twitter were getting mad at me, were flaming me, saying, oh, you expect way too much. This is not a phone for someone who already has the current version. This is a phone for people who have an older model. Maybe, but Apple is also trying to lure people into upgrading more frequently, which is why they have the iPhone upgrade program. And so they need to put out a compelling phone every year, because people who have a phone that's 2 or 3 years old are much more likely to upgrade. It's harder to get the people like us who are upgrading every year to upgrade unless you have some big, wowing, marquee feature. Even if that feature ends up being something that's not used, like for me, 3D touch, because I'll convince myself before it comes out that I will use the feature and that it is a cool feature, even if I know deep down that I probably will never actually use it and haven't really since I got it on an iPhone. So
they're also saying it could be way faster internet, you know. If that happens, that'll be shockingly great.
Well, that was one of the things that was interesting, is people started highlighting on Twitter all the features they were excited about, and there were some stuff that Apple didn't really go into a lot of detail on, like one of the things being the much faster LTE, which I recently just tweeted about. Somebody tweeted at me a chart that showed how much faster the LTE radio is on the iPhone XS. And it was much, much faster. I think probably at least 3 times faster.
Maybe they should have done that like they did with the 3GS, right? They could have said, you know, this is a much faster 10 and the S is for speed.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Once that person sent that graph to me, it immediately reminded me of the 3GS and how much of a huge improvement it was using data when you're out, you know, out and about.
Yeah.
But again, Apple didn't do that. They didn't really push anything as the one big feature. The camera, another big feature. So the pixels on this particular sensor are much larger, I think up to 30% larger. And I love that Apple does this, because I don't know of very many phone manufacturers that do. They know that megapixels aren't everything. A lot of people focus on megapixels, but Apple has been resistant of just increasing the megapixels, because on a small sensor, you really want large pixels. Well, on all sensors, you want the pixels to be as large as possible, because they gather more light, which means they're much more sensitive in dark scenarios, which means you can take better low light images that have less noise, that might have more dynamic range. And this phone does that. It's one of those iPhones that specifically increases the size of the pixels, plus they have a much better lens arrangement in there. And again, I don't feel like we learned about that very much in the keynote. Apple just said, oh, hey, better HDR photos. And that was it, and they moved on.
Well, they talked about a couple other things, too.
They talked a lot about the camera. That was, like, the main thing I came away with. It was like, look at all these amazing things you're going to be able to do with this camera. I mean, did you fall asleep?
Well, they talked about HDR, and they talked about the portrait mode, being able to change the aperture after the fact.
Yeah.
And that stuff is great.
It's like magic.
But it seems more software to me than hardware.
Well, right, but it's a, you know, it has, it's afforded by the hardware, isn't it? You can't, they can't, well, you know, the 10 will do it, but the R and older phones won't do it because they don't have that dual lens cameras.
Well, see, that wasn't clear to me. It was, it seemed like more that they were creating some new software features for the new phone and not necessarily that these new phones had hardware that enabled some software feature that couldn't be enabled on the other phones. It just seemed like they were limiting it to the new phones because, well, they want you to buy the new phones.
Yeah, I think, like Lewis said, I think you needed to sort of like pinch yourself and wake up at that point of the keynote so that you could absorb all the goodness that was coming at you.
Hey, I watched the keynote 2.5 times.
You watched it twice, didn't you?
Yeah.
Wow.
I did. So how many hours of Tim Cook and team is that? 4+ hours? Because I wanted to soak up all the juicy bits that I could.
Double awesome.
Well, let's talk about some of these new features. Well, some of the features that were talked about by all the early reviewers. So a select handful of people started publishing their reviews this week. And it was cool to see them on YouTube again because Apple has been partnering with some YouTubers to get the iPhone reviews out early and the Apple Watch reviews as well. So we'll be talking about those in just a second here. So one of the new big features was Face ID. Actually, let me back up. All up reviews. Early reviews for the iPhone XS and the Max have come out, and most people have said that the new devices are impressive, but this year's models aren't as big of a leap as the iPhone X. Well, we all kind of expected that, right? So let's talk about Face ID. TechCrunch, Matthew Panzerino for TechCrunch says, as far as Face ID goes, there has been no perceivable difference for me in speed or number of positive results. There are supposed to be improvements in off-angle recognition of your face, say when lying down or when your phone is flat on desk. I tried a lot of those different positions, but never really noticed anything that was better about the iPhone XS. Then he goes on to say, well, he might need to train his iPhone XS to have a backlog of his different facial positions and contortions and what have you. So Face ID was one of the things that they said was faster, but TechCrunch said they didn't really notice it being that much faster. Now, iJustine on YouTube, she said that she did notice that it was faster, although it wasn't that much faster. And I'm kind of wondering if this is not just a iteration of Face ID and not a whole new generation. Because in my research, I think we're expecting to see a whole new generation of Face ID in the new iPads that is much better than the one in the iPhone. What were you going to say?
Well, isn't there a training issue here too? You know, like we've all been with, if you've had a 10 for a year, you know, then you've got a year's worth of training data. And so maybe that contributes something?
That is true. And he did highlight that in his piece. So it could just be that. But as far as unlocking it quickly when you're just looking at it, he didn't notice any difference. And iJustine did. Like, as soon as she raised the phone to her face, she actually did it side by side. And you could see the iPhone XS was faster. Now, I wouldn't say it was extremely faster, but it was marginally faster. It was noticeable, but not super impressively faster.
Under the right circumstances, it's already pretty instantaneous anyway.
I think there's a slight lag to it, especially when you're comparing it to Touch ID, because Touch ID was so fast, it was instantaneous. And Face ID has a little bit of a lag to it. But I think in practical everyday use, you don't really notice the lag.
I'm just playing with it now. I just picked up my phone and I swiped up and it immediately opened.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty immediate.
I think it takes a little bit longer than Touch ID, even on my phone. Because like you pick it up and then you swipe one with that. Oh, it didn't work that time. Hold on. That wants me to 1,000, 2, with that. See? It took that long. Touch ID, boom! Like instantaneous. Okay. Let's not linger on these too long. So let's talk about the screen of the XS Max. It's glorious. The New York Times saying the XS Max screen is so good looking that when he used the new screen time feature to monitor use of his device, he discovered that he spent an average of roughly 5.5 hours a day on the XS Max, 2 hours more than on the XS. So it's just that big, beautiful screen. And again, this is one of the things that I need to see.
Doesn't that
seem
kind of a weird thing to say? I mean, he's supposed to be...
What?
Well, this is Brian. We know Brian. We used to work with him at Wired.
Yeah.
you know, like, he's reviewing the phone because he's supposed to be looking at it.
But he was comparing it to the XS. So he was saying that he was using the XS Max more than he was using the XS.
I see.
So
gotcha.
I think his point being the screen is so big and beautiful that he found himself staring at it mesmerically probably drooling out of one side of his mouth.
Right. Completely in a trance. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Exactly. So I'm looking forward to trying out the screen on the XS Max when it comes out. I'm going to go into the Apple Store and I'll also stand there and drool on it. The LTE is noticeably faster on test accounts, on a Verizon test account. Who is this? I don't know who it is because I didn't put this in the notes. But the reviewer got speeds, download speeds of 250 megabits per second in New Jersey versus 170 megabits using the same SIM in an iPhone X. So that's dramatically faster.
Both of those are crazy speeds anyway. 170 is fast, but 250 is bonkers.
Yeah, I almost don't believe this. I mean, he must have been like standing at the top of a building right next to a tower.
Yeah, and it was flying.
That is ultra fast. Yeah. These are probably under ideal conditions because if you live in a city with lots of towers everywhere, you might experience something like this. But out in regular life, 250 megabits per second, that's insane. The camera has some improvements, some impressive improvements. In his comprehensive review of the XS and XS Max, John Gruber revealed that that Apple made the camera sensor 32% larger. I mentioned that earlier. And after noticing that the wide-angle lens on the iPhone XS is 2 millimeters wider than the one on the iPhone X, he also discovered that the lens is longer. A bigger sensor and longer lens don't sound like a big deal, but it required some crafty design to pull it off because the phone isn't any thicker, and the lens had to be farther away from the actual sensor. So somehow they had to move all these little tiny bits and pieces around inside the phone to get this new camera sensor and lens to work. And of course, Apple didn't really tout this very much in the keynote because this is one of those nerdy features, but John Gruber discovered it. Very cool. Another feature that you might like is the phone can actually dynamically drop the frame rates when you are taking video from 30 FPS a second to 24 if it detects that it's not getting enough light. And I don't think that the current iPhone X can do that. You just have a fixed frame rate, either 24 or 30. I keep mine set to 24. It's way more cinematic. Do you guys even know what frame rate you're using?
No idea.
No.
Well, I'm not even shocked. Okay. All right. I want to wrap up with this one because I felt like Marquez Brownlee review was... He's very even-keeled in his reviews and fair. And he said, it's definitely a nice phone. He liked it a lot, but if you have the 10, it's not worth spending your money to upgrade to the new XS unless it's burning a hole. That $1,100 that $1,000 is burning a hole in your pocket. It's a lot of money. We've reached a price point with the iPhones where they're not necessarily impulse buys anymore. I mean, do you remember when an iPhone used to be like $700? You know?
Yeah, an impulse
and
buy.
Now it's, yeah,
isn't there an impulse buy? I always had to like launder the money from my wife and then hide it and.
You were searching for change under the cushions.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, selling pints of blood and plasma.
Yeah. But it used to be a lot cheaper, though. I mean, do you remember when it was $400 and people were like, what? A phone at $400?
That's the magic trick that Apple has pulled off, is they have somehow convinced us all that we need to be spending $1,000 or $1,100 on an iPhone.
Well, this is the main computer for a lot of people, isn't it? And
that's
the
true,
amount of
yeah.
use they get out of it. Like Tim Cook, he got a lot of flack for being on Good Morning America this week, right? And he said, if you break it down, it's about $1 a day. That's if you keep it for 2 years, right? And,
right.
And it's about $1 a day, which is what people, you know, they always make those kind of comparisons. Oh, it's more than, your daily Starbucks habit. But there's some truth to that, you know, like the amount of time that my daughter, you know, like she you know, I mean, all of us, we all live on our phones, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
But it sounds like a infomercial tactic when you're like, it's only going to cost you 30 cents a day.
Right.
It's like, yeah,
too
but
easy
I got to give you it $60 at a time or for $1,200 in one-time payment,
right.
You know, if you include tax. So it's not exactly, it doesn't exactly feel like 30 cents a day or a dollar a day, Tim.
How much is that a month, Lewis? How much is your nut for the upgrade program?
I think it's going to be, like right now, I think it's 49, and since I bumped up to a more storage, I think it's going to be like $56.
Oh, you went for the more storage. Oh, you reminded me I was trying to withhold my rant about that.
Dude, you got to get it, man.
It's not worth it, Lewis.
Oh, my God.
The whole thing is an absolute scam, and they got you. They nabbed you.
I'll tell you, I'm looking. I just did an upgrade, and before I upgraded, you know, to iOS 12, right, I had, 20 gigabytes free or something on the 64. After it was done, it says, oh, you've got like 8 gigabytes left. because it it loaded all these apps back on that it's been offloading. And in the past month or two, things have been acting a little weird. Some things have been glitchy and slow, and it was acting like a phone that was filled up. And that, what's the feature called? Auto offloading of apps is turned on my phone, right? So it does a pretty good job of saying, oh, well, you haven't used this app in 3 months, so we're going to take it off your phone right now. You know, if I start looking at my phone, there's a whole bunch of apps that have a little cloud symbol right beside them. They're not on my phone anymore. So if I want to use them, I got to download them. I mean,
well, you haven't used them. That's why they've been disappeared.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Just, I'm hoping.
Don't question it. Just.
I don't like that. I've got the bigger phone. $5 a month. I'm gonna do it.
So you can load it up with a bunch of useless apps you never use. So you can just feel good about them having them there. You're a digital hoarder, Lewis.
Come on. I mean, like, for instance, one of the apps that I'm looking at right now, one of the lock apps that's on my, you know, the app is, I use that a lot, right? Because it's in my house. But, I mean, I don't use the app a lot. I use HomeKit. But then if you want to change something, sometimes it's good to go in the app. I don't know. I don't like having things disappear like that. It makes me nervous.
I don't either. You just hung yourself.
Okay, I'm a hoarder. Sorry.
Look, I don't even need more storage than 64 gigabytes, and most people don't. I think most people are surprised when they go into their iPhone and look at the storage and see that they're barely using any of it, especially if you're using iCloud photo storage. And this is what annoys me about this whole thing, okay? I'm going to let myself dip my toe into the waters of this rant and try not to get swept away. This is a cheap and stingy tactic that Apple is using. They are intentionally limiting the amount of storage on the low phone to push you into a number that you don't need. They should do 128, 256, and 512, doubles of each other. The reason that they do 64 is because it's barely enough for most people for it to be workable. And then they push you into 256 next, which is way more than most people need. And if you look at it from a cost per gigabyte, it's like $17 per gigabyte for the 64, and it's more like $4 per gigabyte for the 256. So clearly, they financially could give you much more storage if they wanted to. They could give you 128 for the lowest phone. They just don't want to. But more than anything else, this is why it really annoys me. These are premium phones. These are not like iPhones of years past. Apple is charging a premium for these phones now, and yet they're still pulling these stingy, gross tactics to try to push you into an even higher price point, and I don't like it. I think it's gross, and I think they need to stop doing it. They need to give you what you're paying for. They should give you 128 at the base, 256, and then 512. Everyone gets 128. You're getting what you paid for, and then if you need more storage, you just pay to double it. That's a fair deal. It's a fair and honest deal, and it's not as... What? You're laughing at me over there. But you agree with me, don't you?
I can feel the spittle. I'm getting covered in it.
It's a good thing I have a plethora of cult cloth here to wipe down my microphone and my screen. In my mouth. Sorry, go ahead, Lewis.
Actually, that'd be awesome if they did that. But, you know, I don't get that bent out of shape about it. I guess I'm just not that...
That's the right thing to do. That would be the right. That's the right way to treat your customers.
There's a whole bunch of customers who don't download any apps, right? They just use the stock apps. They don't download one app, and you know they don't use more than like 30 gigs or whatever. You know, in their entire life of the phone. And then I guess you know you've got people who so 64 is like this. It is pretty high ceiling for that those kind of people, and then. You know, I agree with you. I think a 128 would be perfect for me because in the year I've used my iPhone, I've used up like 63 of the 64 gigs. But of course, I'm using all the iTunes services, right? I'm paying that tax. You know, that's like 10, 20 bucks for all the storage that we're paying, plus the iCloud photos, plus, you know, the Apple Music and the cloud. You know, that all adds up. If I factored that out and added, you know, and sort of, you know, looked at the total I paid for that, I'm probably paying more than I would pay to just upgrade to the next biggest iPhone. You know, with more storage.
You tweeted a story at me this week that was talking about iCloud photo storage, and I think it was saying, correct me if I'm wrong, that the reason you don't need so much storage on your iPhone is because of iCloud photo storage, right? And the story painted that as a good thing. And I came away from it annoyed, saying, well, this is exactly why they're doing it. They give you a phone with less storage because they know it will push you into that service. It will push you into a phone that has storage that you don't need. And so they are intentionally and stingily limiting the lower storage model, or the lower model and its storage, to push you into those other ways for them to make money.
I think that's a little bit, you know, dark and weird and very conspiratorial.
I think it's exactly why they're doing it.
I think they do these studies.
Apple's marketing team is smart, and they know how to get more money out of every person.
Well, they're already making 40% margins on these phones anyway, so, I mean...
So you just affirmed my point! So why do you... So if you're making a 40% margin on a phone, can you not spend the extra $20 and add an extra 64 gigabytes of storage to the phone? I think you should.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think 128 would be nice too. I think they should stick with the 64, but do 128, then 256, then 512.
Oh, you're out of your mind.
Well, that's kind of complicated, right? But
I think so. I think the reason that they don't do 128 is because they know it'd be perfect for most people, and so they wouldn't sell very many of the mid-tier models, which are $1,250 if you're looking at the iPhone XS Max. Plus tax.
Look, don't you remember this debate back phone. In the Mac days? I mean, Apple's always. Do you remember like people used to get completely bent out of shape because there wasn't enough RAM or the hard drive was only, you know, what, 40 gigs or whatever it used to be back in the day?
40 gigs? Who would need so much storage?
This debate goes back to the Macintosh days, you know, like when with the iMac. I remember the people debating this stuff about the iMac.
Yeah, but this would be like. If you were comparing this to an actual Mac, because this is their most premium phone, this would be a bit like buying a top-tier MacBook Pro, and they give you 128 gigs of storage.
Well, don't they do that? That's not exactly what they do.
Don't give them any ideas, Leander. No, the base of the premium MacBook Pro, the 15-inch, is 512. It's actually usable for many people. Anyway, I didn't mean to dive full into this river and go swimming in it, but I was... bitching about this on Twitter, just getting highly annoyed when I was looking at the different storage options, because I don't want to spend more money. $1,100 is enough for a phone plus tax. It's enough. And now you're trying to push me to $1,250, and I feel myself being pulled to it. And I don't even need $1,250. Just give me $112 and we'll call it good. Okay, so let's move on to the Apple Watch 4, which I'm really excited about. I ordered it, didn't cancel it. And Leander, I think you'll be very happy to know that the Independent called the Series 4 Apple Watch astonishingly good.
They must listen to the cult cast.
They must listen to the cult cast because you have that word trademarked. I'm not even sure they're allowed to use this in journalism.
I know, but it's not a bit of nasty lawyers now.
Yeah, get your lawyer to contact them and let them know they need to change it to extremely good or something of that nature. Well, The Verge and The New York Times both raved about how great the new larger display looked, particularly the rounded corners. It made it much more apt for looking at photos and using apps. The watch felt faster and snappier than the Gen 3. But The Verge noted that the improvement in speed wasn't as drastic as the change from Gen 2 to Gen 3. Now, coming from a Gen 0 like I have, it's going to be like moving from a 1992 Toyota Corolla to a Lamborghini, I think. Right. It's going to be that much of a change. Also, one of the things that I can't stand now on my Gen 0, now that I've seen it, I've seen the vision of the future, the rounded corners. And actually, Apple is using this design language on their phone, on their watch now. I kind of wonder if they're going to do this on the iPad, if they're going to do this on maybe their Macs going forward, those rounded screens, those rounded LED screens, those rounded OLED screens. It makes the device look so much more modern and smooth. I really like it. And the juxtaposition of those sharp corners of previous generation Apple Watches, the screen has those sharp corners that are jettisoning into the rounded corners of the hardware. It looks terrible to me now. I can barely look at it.
It offends your eyes.
I really find it to be quite offensive. I love the look of the Gen 4, those rounded corners. The screen kind of effervesces into the actual hardware itself. This is the Apple Watch that I think we've always wanted. I think this was Apple's vision for the watch. It just took them four generations to get to it. And I'm really excited to get my hands on this watch. I don't think I read a single or saw a single bad review of the Gen 4 watch. What did you guys think? I know you saw the reviews too. Anyone say anything negative about this?
People are raving about it. It's a genuine, you know, home run. It's a hit. It's a massive hit already. They've sold it like crazy, haven't they?
Yeah, the wait times are pretty long already. I think you have to wait till like mid-October to get one now.
Yeah.
Now, I will say the thing I'm most excited about is the extra screen real estate with all the different complications that you could put under the screen. Some of the other marquee features, I just don't think I'm ever going to use. Like the fall protection.
Nobody thinks they're going to use it.
Until if,
yeah. I know. Well, that's a good point. I saw Rene Ritchie. He was waxing on and on about how important this feature is, especially if you're older. I think he's probably right. For us young
dudes. He's watching too much. I've fallen over and I can't get up TV, right?
Well, I think he said that he actually had a family member fall and it affected their health in a really negative way. So particularly for this feature has a lot of personal importance to him. So I get that. I don't know if I'll ever use that feature. I don't think I will. The heart stuff, again, I don't really know how beneficial that's going to be to me personally. So it's cool that it's in there, but I'm not particularly excited about it. I'm more excited to have a more accurate heart sensor that I can use during workouts. What are you going to say, Leon?
Well, I had a thought about the heart. The first thing that people are going to do when they get their hands on you know the new EKG is they're going to test it on themselves, and then they're going to test it on everyone else around them, right? Or their friends, their wife, their kids, their partners.
So? Yeah. That never even came to my mind.
And will that have any effect on like the data gathering?
I would imagine because your watch is supposed to only be monitoring your heart. And if you feed it all these different heart rates,
it's going to say,
I would imagine that's a bad thing. Yeah.
That's weird.
If you put it on your wrist and then you put it on your kid's wrist, it might trigger that low heart rate. Or actually, kids have higher, faster heart rates.
Right. They're like little
mice
and bats and stuff on there.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's going to be like, I'm calling 911 on your behalf. Right, there'll be a cardiologist here in the next 30 minutes.
Yeah. Oh,
exactly.
God.
Yeah, exactly. So, the screens, plural, those are what I'm most excited about on both the iPhone XS Max and also on the Apple Watch Series 4. There's a lot of other features that I think are cool to have, but the screens, I just like big screens. I'm drawn to big screens. I like having big screens. And I've been watching a lot of reviews of the Apple Watch Series 4. That screen, it doesn't sound like it's a whole lot bigger because the screen was already so small, but it really seems like it makes a big difference. And there's just so much more space on your wrist for photos and for complications and stuff. I'm really excited to get my hands on mine. I ended up going with the silver with the seashell sport loop. Which one did you guys get?
Go on, Lewis.
I didn't order one.
What?
I know.
Hold on. How do I boot him from this room? Is there a way I can boot him from this call? I don't see a way to do it.
I know. Yeah, just cut him off. That's it. You're done.
Yeah.
This will be Lewis's last episode. How about that? Lewis.
I know. I think I fessed up to this before. I had the same problem. It's like I'd like to get one, but I guess I didn't fess up to it because it happened after the last recording. But
you tried to hide it.
It's just you know, my watch is fine. I'd like
you
to have
the Series
a new
3.
One. Yeah, the Series 3 works fine, and I don't really feel like I need an ECG. I'd like to have the faster one. I like the way the new one looks, but by the time that I got around to, you know, putting in the thing, it's like the one that I wanted wasn't really available. So I'd had to get an LTE one again, which I have the LTE Series 3, and I've never activated that part of it because I always have my phone. So I don't know. To me, it was just like $500 too far. I'm with, you know,
it is expensive. It is expensive.
The way you cheaped out on the phone, I cheaped out on the
watch.
Wait,
what? Cheaped out? I mean, made a rational decision about spending my own hard-earned money.
Obeyed your budgeting. Yeah, I got to say, the more I read about it, the more I'm like, God dang it. I mean, if I was to go in, when I go in there tomorrow to pick up my phone, if they had one in a box, would I buy it? Probably.
If he just slid it to you and he's like, here, just take this too. It'll be $500, but here, take this with you.
I mean,
like,
although,
okay, thanks.
The other thing is my wife will be with me because she's getting a phone too. And I don't know if she's going to go for it either. $500.
So maybe
bucks.
She'll walk out with the brand new Apple Watch and you'll still be on your Series 3.
That could happen.
Well, let me touch on some of these other features that I thought were worth mentioning. Where am I here? Aha. No one has been able to test out the ECG feature yet because it hasn't been enabled. In fact, we learned this week that the FDA hadn't approved the feature until the day before the keynote. So I'm sure there's a great story of scramble and chaos and all of the terrible angst that probably went into getting this feature approved last minute as Apple did so they could announce it on stage the very next day. But they did it, and so the feature hasn't been enabled yet. And the digital crown, people really seem to like that a lot. TechCrunch said that the digital crown felt more like turning a mechanical dial, which I think sounds fun. The general consensus of the review seems to be that the Apple Watch Series 0 is much better than the earlier versions. And if you have an original Apple Watch, the Series 1 or the Series 2, and you're thinking about getting a new Apple Watch, it's kind of a no-brainer. This is the one that you're going to want to get. And then if you have a Series 3, some people are saying it's still worth upgrading, Lewis, for the fall detection. So you can take your ECG and learn that you need a new heart and that you should schedule an appointment to have that installed right away. So still something to consider. I think the best part of the new Apple Watch, well, this is a Apple Watch OS update that will be included with the new Apple Watch, but also works on the older ones, is the new walkie-talkie feature, which lets you connect to your friends and tap on the watch and speak to those friends instantaneously, just like you would if you had a walkie-talkie. But I was introduced to a new phrase this week that I had never heard before that describes something that I felt my entire life, and that is the word FOMO. Had you guys known about this word before this piece? Mm-hmm. Leonard, are you even still there?
I'm sorry, I was just trying to ask Lewis to go on to walkie-talkie so I can play with it, so I wasn't really listening. But
okay, never mind. Well, FOMO is anxiety that an exciting or interesting event may currently be happening elsewhere, often aroused by posts seen on social media websites. And apparently many people are experiencing FOMO with the new Apple Watch or with Apple Watch OS 5 because they know that there is this new feature out there and they want to try it, but they don't know anyone that actually has an Apple Watch. So this new cool feature that is available to them is one that they can't use, which is exactly how I felt about the digital heartbeats when I first got my Apple Watch. I knew people were trading heartbeats all around me, but I had no one to trade heartbeats with at the time, and that made me very sad.
That is so, so sad.
Have you guys been able to use the walkie-talkie feature yet?
No, like I said, I was just adding Lewis.
I sent my invites to Leander yesterday, never heard back from
him. I didn't see anything.
Yeah, well, it may be kind of buggy. I was looking into this yesterday. That's why I ended up writing this story about it, because all these people on Twitter, you know, some percentage of them are like, oh, this is the best feature ever. It's so awesome. I love it. Game changer. And then there's like all these other people are like, I can't get it to work. I don't have any friends that have one. It's also like, I can't get a request. I can't get it to work. And I mean, I'll tell you one thing. When I went to do it and I'm scrolling through it, I have probably 1,000 contacts. And
whoa, really?
Yeah, and I start scrolling through that, and it's like, oh my god, it takes forever. I finally figured, this is kind of obvious in retrospect, but I started using the digital crown, and if you use the digital crown fast enough to go through that, it'll pop up a little like a letter, right? So you can jump to the letters kind of the way you can on other picker type things. But so then it's a little bit easier. But like, for instance, it says Leander Caney. Not once, not twice, not three times, but 4 times in my list of contacts. Now, you know, that, I guess that's on me. My contacts are a little disorganized. But, I've sent 2 different invites to Leander. God knows if that's even to his, which account that's to. I've sent them to other people, accidentally sent it to somebody else.
Yeah, I just
heard
did that.
Back from anyone.
I just accidentally sent it to some PR woman that I don't even know.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to do. As I was saying, right before we were starting to record this podcast, I got my first request from a friend, and I didn't want to, click it because we're recording, or we just clicked record, right? And I don't dare do it because he'll start talking, right? It's like,
I
can't pay any attention to you. Yeah. So I didn't want to do it, but you know what? Now I don't see the request anymore. Maybe maybe he has revoked it.
Well, there's got to be some type of time limit on how long. If a person accepts your request to speak directly to their phone or to their Apple Watch, there's got to be some type of time limit in place there, because you wouldn't want someone to just be able to talk directly to your wrist at all times of the day or night after approving their request once. I mean, what if you're in a meeting and some guy, you know, starts wringing your wrist talking about how loud his fart was that day? You know, it's like, these are your friends. Yeah, you don't want them to have unfettered access to a speaker on your wrist. Like, you need to lock that thing down, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, listen,
especially with friends, especially when you have friends like the kind of people Leanne hangs out with.
Yeah, well, you know, oddly enough, just looking at it again today, today there's a list at the top, two names, it says suggested. And guess who's on that list? Irfan Elijah and my lovely wife. I happen to know that both of you have Series Zero watches and can't possibly do it. So,
that's right. I mean, thanks, I am your best friend, so it's not surprising that I'm there.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying. But
if I had an Apple Watch Series 4, though, that would be a different story.
Yeah,
well, we could talk to each other all the time.
Somehow, Apple doesn't know what version of watch people have. I don't know.
Yeah, because I don't even have iOS 5 watchOS 5 installed on
you can't.
Because I can't, right, exactly.
So, yeah, it does make it complicated. I saw somebody on Twitter saying, like, oh, you know, Apple ought to be able to, you know, serve up a list of people on your contact list who have watchOS 5. Maybe that's against Apple's privacy kind of situation, you know, but it would be, you know, this is one of those things that would definitely make things easier. And
well, it's needed. That's the only way this is practically going to work, if you know who you can actually contact.
Yeah. I mean, I just wish it was a list of, like, people I've actually sent an email to in the, I don't know, the last year, as opposed to the last 10 or 20 years. I mean, so many people in there.
Apple should disappear your contacts like your apps, right? If you haven't contacted anyone in a while. It'll just disappear.
You've been offloaded.
I go through my contacts list sometimes, and I don't know who half those people are anymore.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's just a cemetery of acquaintances that I've had over the last 10 years, and I probably only speak to 10 of them, and I probably only actually want to speak to 3 of them. So it would be nice if you could go through and have a feature where you could just press a button and have the app say, hey, you haven't emailed or called these people in 20 years. Should I just delete this guy? And you're like, yeah, I don't like him anymore. Yeah, he slept with my wife. Yeah, that guy's dead. So just go ahead and cut those guys out.
I mean, I'm looking at the, you know, the people on my favorites list. You know, Leander and my wife are the only ones that have a phone or a watch. So I was going to say maybe they should... maybe they should at least just start out with, like, here's your favorites, you know, winnow those out from the pile. I mean, you've selected those and pick those out of the pile. So you can say, oh, well, I know this, you know, because it really is. It's rather cumbersome. If you got a long list of contacts like I do, it's not an ideal way. It's not very smooth and elegant. It's sort of the opposite of elegant.
Can I point out that I've felt FOMO my entire life? Like Friday, Saturday night in college, I always thought there's got to be something going on somewhere, right? There's got to be a party. People are doing something that I don't know about. And then you'd spend your whole evening trying to figure out what other people are doing. And this is before everyone had cell phones that you can communicate with in 100 different ways. So it was hard to get a hold of people. I mean, now, I mean, you can contact someone so easily. You always know where the party's at. It's where Leander is usually. Yeah. But, you know, back then you didn't really know, and you had to, like, call people, or if you want to take it back even farther, you had to, like, page people, 911, get back to me. I need to know what's going on tonight. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? I've always had this feeling, and I never knew how to describe it until I read this piece.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying, but honestly, these days I've almost got fo-fo. Fear of finding out. Like, oh my God, there's 3 bands I want to see Saturday, and one's playing here, one's playing there. You know what I end up doing? Sitting at home. Because there's too much crap going on. I'm too busy. Doing nothing. I don't even get it. It's weird.
Well, not everyone can have the exciting life of El Caney. Not everyone has the liver tenacity to live the type of life that El Caney lives too. So there's that. Well, I think we should wrap it up with this very last story. iOS 12.1 has basically confirmed that new iPads are on the way this fall. Man, they are getting... The leaks are rampant, and they're coming from new versions of iOS. It's just crazy how this keeps happening. And it's the same two guys every single time. It's Steve Stratton-Smith and it's developer Guillerme Rambo. And they're constantly releasing facts about Apple's future plans from iOS. You would think that Apple would try to hire these guys, put a muzzle on them, you know? Mm-hmm. Just give them $175,000, $200,000 a year just to do nothing.
Yeah, go to, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just hire them just to do nothing, just to stop leaking all this information. Anyway, developer Guillerme Rambo was digging around iOS 12.1, and he churned up a variable which mentioned iPad 2018 fall. Well, there you go. That's about as specific as it's going to get as far as Apple revealing when these new iPads are going to come out. And interestingly enough, he also found a glyph of the new iPad. And we know it will have Face ID, but there was no notch. So it seems like this new iPad is going to have a notchless Face ID system, which I kind of wonder if it's going to go down like this. We're going to get the new iPad, and it's going to have a new version, a notchless version of Face ID that's going to be better and faster than the current Face ID. And then that faster Face ID will be brought to the new iPhones in, well, I guess next year. So the iPhone 11 or whatever they end up calling it. Now, that would be maybe a little bit strange for Apple to add a marquee feature like that to an iPad and not to an iPhone, since the iPhone tends to be the device that gets all the new marquee features. But, I mean, we'll have to wait and see what happens. I mean, there is no notch. We know that. And we know that there's going to be Face ID. So I'm not sure why the Face ID would be there, but the notch wouldn't be.
Well, they must have a bigger, also, they must have a bigger bezel.
That could be it. Yeah, maybe there's just a bigger
bezel.
And
the reason the bezel on the iPad is bigger anyway is because I think it stops you getting false positives, you know, when you're holding it. Because you have to be able to hold it without touching the
bezel is your handle. Yeah, good point. Yeah, I was looking at my iPhone 10 today, and I don't know how they're going to move the Face ID camera and system into the phone. I mean, there is no bezel on the iPhone 10. There's practically nothing there. Where would you move the camera to? I don't know where they could put it. Where would they move the earpiece to? I kind of wonder if the iPhone 10, this is going to sound silly, I wonder if it's ever not going to have a notch, because I just don't know where they will put, well, where they will,
yeah,
put it
there
in the
was,
phone.
There was an amazing piece of little animation that I saw the other day on Twitter. In fact, I should follow this up, because it's a new phone out of China. And it has pixels that go blank when you want to use the camera, or somehow disappear.
Huh.
I just saw this quick GIF, and it was like this, because it was someone took a picture at a trade show where this thing was being shown off, and I don't even remember the manufacturer. So it was like I don't know who it was.
So like the camera was underneath the screen, and the pixels would just go translucent. I guess.
And suddenly the camera would appear, and I was like, "Whoa, that just looked like magic."
I bet those photos look like absolute shite, though.
Because right, there's a giant pixel in the way, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that's really funny. I would love to see one of those photos. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. I can't believe we made it through all those stories. We didn't go nearly as long as I thought we would. But that's all the cult cats we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi or talk to us about any of the stories we mentioned on today's show, we're all on Twitter. I'm at Arifon. Lander is at L. Kenny. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the CultCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CultCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Lewis, you take this one.
Next time.
Ooh. That was like the passion whisper that Tim Cook does on stage.
Next time.
Except slightly more aggressive.
Yeah, we didn't get any Tim Cook impressions this week.
Yeah, do us a Tim Cook one.
Next time, y'all! I could probably call his bank and get right into his account using that voice. They would never know. They would never know it wasn't him.
Hey,
there we go.
Did I just make your day?
You did. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
You know, I can record that for you, and we can make it your ringtone.
Oh, really?
Hey, yeah, ring, ring, ring. Hey, yeah, ring, ring, ring.
Even better, your alarm tone.
Oh, my God,
wakey,
the alarm
wakey,
tone.
Wakey, wakey, yeah, eggs and baggy.
Right. If I had that on my alarm and it was across the room, that would definitely be getting me out of bed.
You get up, open the window, and jump right out.
No more laughing.
Oh, Lewis, sorry, you're really Lewis, loud.
That is right. I am very loud.
You are loud, Lewis.
Turning my ears.
Oh, poor little Leander. Turn your headphones down. I mean, I know you like it cranked.
I did, but then
ASMR
I can't
crap,
hear.
But
then I can't hear. What's his face?
Yeah, he can't hear Tim Cook Jr. over here. Are you doing your Oreos? What's going on?
Damn, Lewis, you should be going into the ASMR business.
Oh, yeah.
That was giving me tingles.
I'm sure it is.
Yuck.
I found a really, really fucking weird one yesterday. She's like a 12-year-old girl. She does a whole bunch of ASMR
stuff.
Oh, Lord.
Somebody call Chris Hansen.
Who's that?
He's that guy who always walks in while some old guy is trying to hit on a 12-year-old. And he's like, take a seat. What are you doing here?
What?
To Catch a Predator? You don't know what I'm talking about?
No.
You've never seen that show? Well, you should Google it because it's about to be you.